quite a few people interested in intuition. I think perhaps it would be important, or at least useful, to try to understand a little better some of the mysterious workings that occur within ourselves. And perhaps one of the most important of these is generally referred to as intuition. What it is, how it originates, and how it functions as have not yet been standardized or classified. And perhaps one of the most important and direct means of estimating this faculty is by reference to Buddhism. Because this group, this great Eastern philosophy, explored so many of the subjective aspects of human consciousness. According to Buddhism, man has what is called the six sensory or six sensory machines. These consist of the five senses with which we are familiar, and a sixth factor which is called the mental coordinator. Now, the purpose of the mental coordinator is to compute the testimonies of the sensory perceptions. It further has to bring to bear upon all new evidence, all that is already available within the consciousness of the individual himself. This is almost a problem in modern computerization. Every moment, testimonies of one kind or another are entering into our mental lives through the sensory faculties. Of course, the most important of these faculties are the faculties of sight and hearing. But even those less highly specialized also contribute a variety of supporting evidences of our conduct and our attitudes toward life. The coordinator has as its primary function to digest and assimilate all new evidence and incorporate it into the permanent structure of human insight. This means, in substance and essence, that constantly the individual is adding to his store of knowledge, but is not aware of the process. He pays little conscious attention to the things that occur around him, but subconsciously he is aware of all of them. And we know through hypnotic research and through regression that there is scarcely a detail in the life of the individual which is not permanently recorded. To the Buddhist, this record is due to the constant, precise function of the mental coordinator. This faculty takes control of all types of phenomena. It gives us a constant insight into everything that makes up our daily living. It also exercises a censorship. For when something occurs to us which is contrary to the basic structures of our nature, this difference, this inconsistency, is also listed. Today, especially, the environment is constantly bombarding us with material which is not essential, not useful, and even is dangerous or detrimental. This is also filtered out by the coordinator. And as a result of this, the individual learns not only what to do, but what not to do. There is a relationship between this problem and that of conscience. But conscience is essentially a moral issue arising in the internal psychic integration. The actual record of experience is brought in through the coordinator. Now, the reason this is possible is because nature is a systematic structure. Nature does not feed into the sensory perceptions uncensored material. It brings to the sensory perceptions a great deal of rather well-clarified information. It brings in also new ideas. It reminds us of things long past. It brings the wisdom of our childhood to bear upon the thoughtfulness of our mature years. From the cradle to the grave, the record is unbroken. And into this structure, there is brought such a mass of information that it were it not for the incredible skill of the sensory computer, most of the value of living would be lost. After the information has been brought in and classified and organized and censored by previous information, has been variously cleansed of errors, and has been supported by previous evidence that has been assembled, it then becomes available to us for the re-expression or the externalizing of our attitudes. Attitudes are largely based upon the testimonies of this computerization process. Now, as we study this a little more carefully, we find some interesting points. Namely, that nearly all information regarding to the material life of man originates in his environment. The individual is placed in a situation in which he is constantly taking in material, reorganizing it, and releasing it again into his environment. Therefore, in silence, he gains the wisdom of the coordinator. And every time he opens his mouth, he expresses some part of this coordinated knowledge. Actually, we are not conscious of a large part of the basic factors of attitudes. We do not know really why we think the way we do. We do not know why we have certain reactions to occasions and occurrences. We do not know why we suddenly blurt out something that we did not intend to mention. Nor do we know why, in another moment, we hold secret that which might be beneficial to general knowledge. We have a dispositional factor. And this dispositional factor represents, to a very great degree, the workings of the conscious mind. The coordinator, however, goes behind the conscious mind. It goes back to the very root of intellection within ourselves. Therefore, it is quite possible for the individual, living only upon the surface of his perceptions, should be easily deluded, should misunderstand, and have poor judgments on a variety of matters. He is then, so to say, speaking off of the front of his mind, or thinking from that front. This thinking is also supported by the faculty perceptions. They not only testify to value, but in an undigested state, they bear witness to occurrences as they appear to be. It is only after the evidence is passed through the coordinator that its basic value is clearly determined. One of the reasons why we have so much trouble in our daily living is that we are unable to allow the coordinator to function properly. We are constantly interfering with it, or trying to. The interference is on the surface because we cannot get back into it. The interference arises from superficial thinking and undisciplined attitudes. The individual who is the hopeless victim of his own mental processes or is completely dominated by his emotional intensities is not aware of the availability of any higher form of thinking. He is simply limited to the immediate. That which comes in goes out instantly. But the record that passes through the coordinator still continues to exist, but is not so quickly or easily accessible. If, therefore, we study people carefully, we realize that intuition is of many degrees and occurs variously in different age groups, is much more commonly found in the feminine than in the masculine temperament, and is perhaps very powerful in small children. This is due largely to the fact that the conscious mind has not interfered with the intuitional process, which has brought into play not only the evidence of the present existence, but to a large degree the balance of previous life patterns. This coordinator extends back through and into previous embodiments because it is the reservoir of the complete accessible knowledge that the person has accumulated in his evolutionary process. This knowledge is not carried forward as simple incidents. It is carried forward in the form of general value, final conclusions, ultimate decisions as they arise in the processes of living. The intuitive person is most likely to be a person who is essentially mentally and emotionally honest. Intuition functions in spite of mental interference to some degree, but more clearly and completely where this mental interference is eliminated. Now, how do we eliminate the mental interferences that arise every day? How do we escape from false, superficial testimonies? The interval between the coordinator's function and that of the objective mind is greater than most people realize. The objective mind is simply arriving at a series of superficial conclusions on all subjects, whereas the coordinator brings out only a seasoned account. Now, the sensory perceptions have much more in them in the form of information than we first realize. But if we are constantly betraying the testimonies, if we fail to allow this coordinating process to function smoothly and directly, we are less intuitive. We are intuitive largely to the degree that we get out of the way of the computerizing process. If we constantly interfere with it, if we constantly go against its testimonies, if we constantly press our own personal attitudes against that which is best, we will have trouble. Now, intuition is most obviously available where there is less interference with the processes of learning. False learning betrays the coordinator, but does not attain a victory, because the coordinator sorts it out. But it can betray the conscious mind. It can lead the conscious mind into a variety of difficulties. One of the laws in nature, which we cannot resist, is the law of cause and effect. The computer works upon this basic fact all the time. Every cause has an effect. When we use the frontal thinking of the mind only, causes and effects are hopelessly confused, but they are never confused in the coordinator. Everything that we do has results and consequences. If we perform an action without any particular intellectual support, the results will be heterogeneous. Some will be good, some will be bad. some will be worthless. But other ways of approaching the problem indicate that within ourselves the coordinator already knows from its accumulated statistics almost exactly what the consequences will be of any action which we indulge in. The coordinator is prophetic, not because it has some mysterious faculty beyond comprehension, but because it is basically, essentially, and eternally honest. And honesty inevitably results in a kind of prophetic power. We see this around us in society. We are today faced with numerous examples of it. Thoughtful persons realize that the present dilemmas are largely due to our own making, that we are responsible for the conditions which affect us adversely. A few, 20, 25 years ago, proclaimed exactly what is happening now. They knew it was going to happen. They knew it had to happen under a world governed by immutable laws and facts. Those persons who saw more clearly are the ones who took advantage of the testimonies of the coordinator. They knew that these things had to happen. But the majority, using the frontal mind only, refused to accept the operation of cause and effect. They preferred to think in terms of luck, of providence, or of some strange intercession that was going to take care of everything, rather than to trust to the internal faculty, which would have given them intuitive insight. They preferred to continue in their way, deny the obvious, and finally fall into the dilemma. So intuition, in one sense of the word, is simply a clear recognition of values. It is possible in almost every instance to determine the outcome of any course of action by considering the motives which impelled it, the methods by which this action was carried out, and most of all, its final relationship to universal law. Is it acceptable to the law? If it is not, it is doomed to fail. Actually, however, these large concerns are not always so obvious to us, for there are all kinds of experiences and circumstances which can affect the intuitional process. We know, for example, that there are laws governing the structure of the human body. Lavater, the great physiologist and physiognomist, pointed out that everyone's fortune is written on him. But we do not know this, and we do not notice it with the superficial faculties that we possess, but the coordinator does. The coordinator notices it because in the subconscious of ourselves, we have already passed through similar experiences. We have already been deceived in the same way many times ago. We have made false pretenses, not just once, but hundreds of times. And the outcome of every attitude that we take is obviously to be determined by reference to our own internal reference frame, which, however, we usually ignore. There is no doubt in the world, for example, that the coordinator, looking at the face of a person, can tell, almost certainly, whether that person is honest or dishonest, whether they are happy or miserable, whether they are trustworthy, whether they are sincere in their relationships, whether they can be depended upon in emergencies, and also all of their befitting and bewildering inconsistencies will be stamped upon the face. It also follows, as Lavater points out, that the body also is constantly testifying to the motives of the person. For long ago, in ages past, these motives shaped the body. And gradually, in each embodiment, the internal person gradually transforms the outer person into the semblance of itself symbolically. The way we walk, the way we use our hands, all these things tell what we are. Now, I think years ago I told you an interesting story, but it might be worth repeating in this context, that a bank teller was given a check to cash by an unknown person. The bank teller was suspicious. He did not know why he was suspicious, but he held back the check and asked an official of the bank to verify its authenticity. The check was a forgery. The teller was never able to say just how he knew it was a forgery. But he said when he looked at the man at the window, desiring to cash the check, he instantly knew that that man was dishonest. Now, that would be called clairvoyance almost, certainly an extrasensory decision, but was simply a plain state of the coordinator taking over. Inside of the individual, the background of his experiences, the people he had known, the lives he had lived, all of the incidents of life combined to make that decision possible. He was aware because in the coordinator, a series of facts were assembled. He also was aware because of the distinguishing marks upon the face of the man. He did not know what those marks meant, but the coordinator did. It could read character because it was built upon the testimony of thousands of years of experiences by that entity in its evolution through the universe. All these different factors add to the development of an internal recognition, estimation, or analysis. We know that doctors who are really well versed in their professions are able to often diagnose a patient before he sits down for a diagnosis. The doctor knows what is wrong with the person when he enters the room. The doctor himself probably wouldn't be able to entirely explain the reason that he knows. But if we went into the coordinator, it would be the result of working with hundreds of persons, working with their problems, classifying their ailments, classifying the symptoms, and storing this all away in the inner consciousness. When need arose, therefore, it was available. One doctor told me that he was very reluctant to ask people to have elaborate tests and laboratory work. He said, I know what is the matter with them. I've instantly known it. But I have to tell them to go and have these tests, because if I do not, I could be sued for malpractice. If anything went wrong, even if it was the patient's fault, the doctor would be held responsible because he had not had the laboratory work done. Another very interesting field is in the ministry and the priesthood. The average priest or minister, in many instances, can tell immediately the problem of the person who comes to him for assistance. It is some way written on that person. It is not a transference of thought. It is a recognition of symptoms and a proper process of association of ideas. All these symbols add together to a directive, to an indication of that which is correct and that which is incorrect. Another thing that forms an assisting factor is that where we are long associated with people, we have a tendency to let down the barriers of our own judgment. We have a friend who has been a friend for years. We know that friend has shortcomings. We know that they are not always just what they ought to be. But in the term of friendship, we overlook hundreds of little testimonies which should have told us something. So that when the friend in turn becomes an enemy, we are amazed because we did not believe that this could happen. But it was happening all the time, only we didn't know it. If we had the coordinator operating correctly for us, we would have stored up all this back information. We would have discovered whether this person was lying long ago because of little fibs that didn't mean anything. We would know their attitude toward life by their relationships with their families, with their position in business, with their culture, their philosophy, their religious instincts and attitudes. All this would have told us something. But with a blanket of friendship thrown over all the evidence, when the break comes, we are amazed and perturbed. We have not allowed the coordinator to have its proper function. In order to have the best results from this intuitive structure within ourselves, it is necessary for the individual to relax away from false testimonies as they first arise to his perception. The individual must be without prejudice. He must not distort the impulses and instincts that arise within himself. If he is able to quiet the testimony of the frontal mind, he will then allow the intuitive faculty to move into domination of the circumstance. But while he is constantly interfering, he is not able to gain the assistance that he needs. All persons can be more intuitive than they are. But to be this, they must take their ground firmly upon the operation of universal law and be ever observant and mindful of the various conduct patterns of those around them and the conduct patterns which are arising within themselves. Otherwise, they block the intuitional process. One of the more common things that happens in connection with intuition is that it is likely to be most vibrant and vital while the body is at rest. This is why a large part of our what we might call archetypal dreaming, dreams that have meaning, come to us from the coordinator. They come when the conscious functions of the mind are temporarily set aside. They come to us usually not as words, not as the appearance of some person, for the coordinator is not a person. They come through symbols, through various forms and patterns, through hunches, through sudden realizations of things which we do not normally comprehend. We even can find this in the world of science, where a scientist has built into the coordinator a mass of evidence. The coordinator will sort it out when his own conscious mind cannot. And as a result of this, the scientist may wake some morning with the answer to the problem he has been working with for years, simply because in a moment of complete repose, the coordinator came through. We have all of this type of phenomenon constantly, and we pay very little conscious attention to it. But it can be very, very important. The problem of the intuitional recognition of circumstances and conditions. It can include, for example, an individual recognizing certain problems of his own health, but not able to diagnose them. He has a feeling that something is wrong. He has a feeling that his health is impaired, but he cannot put his finger on what is actually wrong. Here again, the coordinator is moving in to try to assist the individual. Now, behind all this, there might be a kind of moral issue involved. Perhaps this individual who doesn't feel good has for many years been violating the principles of law and health. He has been thinking badly, he has been eating badly. He has failed to take proper care of the body. This fact is listed in the coordinator, and the coordinator can tell him at any moment just about how long he can get away with the mistakes he is making. And if the man pays no attention to this warning, it becomes a prophecy, and he gradually succumbs because he has failed to remedy the situation in himself. The same thing happens in family life. Family relationships become brittle. And warnings come from the coordinator that unless attitudes and relationships are changed, the family will be destroyed. It will be broken up. Some are wise enough to try to do something about it. They are harmonizing with the coordinator, which is merely telling them the law relating to the subject. A law based on experience and dramatized and vitalized by ages of human testimony. If this is not heard, however, if the individual continues in his way, then whatever was the disaster that might have been, it becomes the disaster that really occurred. Also, the problem of the coordinator plays quite a part in the latter part of life, where very often the coordinator first informs the individual that his physical existence is going to terminate in the near future. This may not be supported by any medical evidence, but the coordinator has available 1,000 times as much information as any clinical laboratory could find or could gather. The individual's inner life is aware of the happenings. Also, through the five sensory perceptions, we get what might be termed the historical context. We find out what has happened to others. We find out what has happened to empires, to kingdoms, to rulers, to various professions, to peoples, to class and social subjects. All this, there is a very deep and long historical background, which is called tradition. The coordinator receives from us every day some evidences of this tradition. It also is aware, because of its own integrating process, that tradition, like every other part of activity, is governed by laws. These laws operate, and where a new situation becomes identical with an earlier traditional situation, then similar, if not identical, consequences will follow. And therefore, it is perfectly possible for the individual, quietly in his own thinking and in his own reflection, to realize almost prophetically the outcome of almost any situation in which he finds himself. He can also apply this to the fate of nations, to the fate of collective structures, to the rise and fall of industrial systems. All these things are basically set in patterns of infinite and immutable law. The coordinator helps the individual to adjust his own mind to these laws and gives him the final evidence, the final proof of the reality of the situation that is gradually developing. Now, there are times when people get hunches that do not work out. The individual, therefore, has to watch constantly to find out how much of his conclusions arise from the coordinator and how much comes from traditional habit patterns within himself. Most persons so live that their relationship to universal law is obscured. They live in a pattern in which they pay little or no attention to the great principles upon which life is built. These principles are invisible in most cases, but their consequences are painfully visible. We have to work with them every day. At the present moment, we are plunging through a mass of what the Oriental would call karma. It is a condition in which, for ages, we have been building contrary to the rules of the game of life. The coordinator knows this, but the individual does not pause to consider. The individual, building largely upon the satisfaction of personal selfishness and ambition, chooses to ignore those truths which might give him a better relationship with life. We find this quite frequently in such simple and imminent circumstances as alcoholism. The average alcoholic knows that he's an alcoholic, or finds out in due time. He knows that he is playing a losing game. He knows that it will destroy all that is best in his life. Yet he will not or cannot change. And fully aware of the inevitable tragedy, he moves relentlessly toward it until finally it catches up with him. If he survives, perhaps he is a little wiser. This type of decision to do what one pleases at the expense of doing what one should is one of the factors that blocks the intuitive faculty in the individual. We all have it, because we all have behind us not only ages of personal growth, but a vast universal complex of factors which subconsciously we accept, even though we may ignore them consciously. How then should we start in to try to develop the intuitive faculty better than it is, so that it can serve us more efficiently when need arises? One thing we have to do is to gain some form of mental honesty. This is really the beginning of the whole mystery. It is not the end, for there is more to it than honesty. But honesty is probably the most important single ingredient. Honesty means that we must stop fooling or deceiving ourselves, especially to doing this knowingly. We must gradually reduce this error factor. We must stop thinking or feeling or acting dishonestly. Now, this is a very large order for most people. Many do not even realize that they are dishonest. They do not believe for a moment that their various prejudices have anything wrong with them. They have no realization that every day they are compromising principles in order to advance some personal desire. The individual wishes his own happiness first, but does most of his life working against this happiness by his conduct and his attitudes. Intuitive people are not always merely spiritual people, but many great mystics have been also extraordinarily wise in their internal visions. Very often the prophetic power is prominent in the lives of mystics. One of the reasons is that mysticism is a doctrine of humility. It is a doctrine in which the individual steps aside and allows the truth to live through him. Mysticism is a person in a very gentle, humble, kindly, unselfish relationship with life. The mystic expects to be a servant. He is a servant of truth, a servant of God, and a servant of his fellow men, regardless of his estates or dignities. It is then natural that the mystic, by having fewer false pressures upon his life, is able to release more of the internal computerization, because he is not primarily concerned with personal advantage. He is not trying to gain something for himself. He is not trying to twist facts to support his own preferences. We have, for example, in problems such as we face right now in national election, here we have all kinds of issues being pressed and advanced and sustained and denied by the various candidates for public offices. We find also that too many of the voters are listening for that particular statement which would be of the greatest personal advantage to them. They are not thinking of the common good, but they are thinking of protecting what they have, even if it is at the expense of what they are. This common practice affects both public and private life. Most individuals regard it as proper to live this span of life to personal advantage as far as they can. Personal advantage is very often contrary to common good and also contrary to the testimony of the computerizing factor. To escape this, or to at least outwit it in part, the individual must gradually release himself from attitudes which are not morally right. It's a matter of dishonesty in many instances. It's a matter of self-gratification in others. It is the advancement of career, the accumulation of wealth, and the desire to shine in society. These become the false reasons for life. While they dominate, and their voice is heard louder than the voice of the computer, nothing much of advantage will be gained. The individual will live and pass on in the little pattern that he has created for himself. He will pass on, still striving for that which could never be his in this world or anywhere else. Realizing this, the intuitive person is very likely to be religious. He is very likely to be a person of prayer, of meditation, a person trying desperately, if necessary, to live according to a high code of personal relationships with life. He is trying to overcome the tendency to animosities. He is trying to transmute old hatreds and antagonisms. He is trying to reduce as far as he can the vanities in his own life. He is entitled to anything and everything that is proper for him. But if he wishes to become a better person, he must take advantage only of the better opportunities that arise. Otherwise, he will ultimately short-circuit his own life. If he can begin to reduce these artificial decisions that he makes simply on the basis of the sensory perceptions without coordination, if he will gradually learn to discriminate the laws behind action, he will begin to develop a stronger intuitional faculty. The law of cause and effect is the basis of all prophecy. It is the basis of all the anxieties that we feel.